Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Bottled in China. I'm your host, Emily Steckenborn, and this is the podcast where we discuss wine, food, beer, and so much more happening from halfway around the world. Today, Shana Clark is a wine writer and brand builder with over 15 years' experience in the wine industry. She's written for CNN Travel, Wine Enthusiast, Fortune, and so many other publications. In today's podcast, we're going to be discussing her take on how COVID-19 has impacted the restaurant and wine business. That and so much more happening in this podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Bottled in China. And if you love this podcast, share it. You can find us on iTunes as well as on Spotify. Leave us a review or a 5-star if you enjoyed this episode. We've got podcasts coming out twice per week, so much info. And we cover everything from food, wine, beer, sake, and also sustainability in the F&B space. So don't forget to follow that up as well with previous episodes. Cheers. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode. Shana, welcome to Bottled in China.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm quite excited because today we're talking about a really relevant topic, a topic that everybody's going through around the world, whether they're in wine, hospitality, anything. We're all going through COVID-19 together. So that's what we're going to talk about today, and also covering, you know, what's the situation like for everybody, and hopefully finding some insights on how to help everybody through this time. So the first thing is, you know, right now, COVID-19 has definitely shaped the wine industry and everybody in it. So what are some trends that you've seen in places like Italy and in the US, and what's going on for them?
Sure. I think what's been really, in a strange way, exciting to see what's been going on is that the world kind of understands that wine is an essential business. We're seeing in places in the US and in other countries that retail stores are allowed to stay open, wineries, although they can't have their tasting rooms open, they're still allowed to operate. Down in the Southern Hemisphere, countries were allowed to continue the harvest, so that way nothing happened there, nothing was interrupted. So I think it's really heartening that people understand how wine is not just an agricultural product, and that it really is important worldwide. You know, I think that what's been interesting with the pandemic is seeing how interconnected and how global the wine industry really is. Something happens to one country, it affects others. For example, Frescobaldi in Italy, they export about 67% of their wines. They said when China first closed their doors, it really hurt their business. Barolo and Barbaresco, they export about 80% of their wines worldwide. So right now they're really concerned about being able to get wines to other countries. They're concerned about being able to sell. And everyone's just a little bit nervous about what's going on. But, you know, in terms of what we're seeing for trends is that you know, a lot of places, everyone relies on tourism for sales. And I think that right now, tourism is pretty much non-existent anywhere in the world. And the thing with tourism, it's we're not just talking about tasting rooms. We're not just talking about visitors to wineries. We're also talking about the restaurants, the hotels, and all those other businesses that support the tourism industry. Because none of these businesses are open, these are outlets where wine can't sell. So this is kind of hurting them. Across the board, though, we are seeing that wineries are getting very savvy in terms of growing their direct-to-consumer sales. In Alsace, for example, they've started, some wineries have delivery services for customers. What I was told is they'll make it a point to be in Strasbourg for one day, and they'll let all their customers in Strasbourg know so they can come and pick up their wines from there. America's gotten really savvy about growing their direct-to-consumer channels and getting sales out, which we can talk about a little bit later. But I think that we're kind of seeing that this direct-to-consumer is really important for everybody across the board. So another trend that we're seeing is there's a really big boom in online sales. Wine.com said that for the last 2 weeks in March, their sales pretty much tripled, and they've been selling about $1 million a day worth of wine. They've had to hire 100 people, and they're planning on hiring more. Drizly is also seeing really similar kind of sales numbers. So there's a lot going on with online. Another trend that we're seeing is that certain governments are allowing restaurants and bars to start selling wine and alcohol to go, which they've never been able to do before. And this is something that's kind of happening globally. And it's a way to help support the restaurants and the bars with some of this takeaway business. And it's kind of helping give them a little bit of a financial boost too. So I think that what we're kind of seeing is, you know, the importance of just being strategic and finding different ways to reach the customers. And I think that this is a trend that's happening all across the board.
Yeah, certainly. I think it's actually quite funny that you mentioned that wine is an essential service, because I was actually back in Canada 2 months ago, and right when the pandemic was getting started, they decided to keep the LCBO, which is our liquor control board, open. And these are standalone stores that just sell wine. And you're thinking, everything else been shut, you know, has been shut down, but yet our liquor board is still open for business. And there was queues to get into the shop. So, I mean, it really proves that wine is quite resilient as a business.
It absolutely is. It's going to be interesting to see what happens soon afterwards, though. I think that there is talk of a looming recession, and so I don't know how that's going to affect wine long term. I have some theories, but I think that, you know, I think that we are proving that wine is going to make it through regardless of what comes. It just may change its shape and form a little bit in terms of what we're seeing for sales.
Certainly, and that's a big discussion that people are having. I 100% agree with you in that this is, you know, a little bit of the earthquake, but there's something else coming from it. And hopefully it's not that bad, but it does seem to be a recession, if not even worse than that. And what do you think, you know, even given that time, how can wine brands and importers and distributors and F&B and hospitality be a little bit more resilient in the second wave of what might be to come?
Sure. I think that what they're starting to do now, I think that they're building on something that can continue to grow. I think we're seeing a lot in terms of social media. I mean, Instagram is constantly popping up with notifications that such and such is starting a live video, so-and-so is a live video. I think that these are great channels that haven't been explored before that people are now really grabbing onto. I think that we're seeing a lot more video happening. I think that virtual tastings have also started to become huge. And these are very different from what anything been done before. But I think that people are realizing that we have to reach our customers somehow, and virtually is going to be the way to do it. And I think that it's an interesting strategy, because wine really is so much about connection. Wine really is about personal stories and getting those stories out there. How else do we do it? I mean, if we can't do it face to face. And I think that if it's screen to screen, so be it. That's what it has to be.
Mm-hmm. And how about right now, the entire hospitality scene? I know that you've mentioned that in the US, people can order wine from restaurants, and there's a lot more, the laws are a lot more lax at the moment. But, you know, do you think that there's going to be a rush back to the restaurants and bars when quarantine is lifted? Or do you think people are going to be a lot more conservative when the regulations are lifted?
It's funny, because I actually just finished an article about what this is going to look like. In the U.S. right now, Georgia is allowing restaurants to start to reopen, and there's a few other states that are hot on their heels to do the same. Right now, I know restaurateurs are not comfortable opening their doors, and a lot of them are choosing to wait for a while. Customers are supporting this, too, from different messages and comments on Facebook that they're writing to the wineries, to the Instagram, to the restaurants, I mean, Instagram posts as well. People are not ready to go back, and I do think it's going to take a very long time for people to get comfortable. And when we do go back into it, it's going to look incredibly different than what we know. There's going to be so many more regulations. Ambiance is going to feel completely different than what it was before. So I think that it's going to take time for people to start to get comfortable going back into a restaurant. How that translates into some of these to-go alcohol and wine sales, I'm not totally sure. People do like the convenience of it, so they might continue on with it. They might be more comfortable, though, going to a retail store, so potentially they'll just go back to their retail shop that they liked so much. I think this is going to be a really big question mark for people.
Mm-hmm. You know, in China, when a lot of the regulations got lifted here in Shanghai, the first few weeks, people were not rushing back to the restaurants. And that was a big concern of how long can F&B wait, right? Because, of course, you have so much overhead. You still have to pay rent. And so it was a big question mark, and a lot of people didn't survive it. But I would say 2 to 3 weeks later, people really got back into going to restaurants. And right now, many restaurants are full and you have to call in advance. So it really does take time for people to warm up to the new reality. And in China, what they did is they had lots of rules about distancing within a restaurant. And that also cuts a lot of your costs, right? Because you can't operate at full capacity. So there were so many regulations that inhibited you and made you question if you wanted to open and have you know, and have your chef here and have waiters ready, because if you were only functioning at 10% capacity, it really wasn't worth it. But certainly, today I can say in Shanghai, not for all the country, that things are slowly going back to normal, but there's a big question mark about the future and if we are 100% back to normal, and that's not the case just yet. So just as you've mentioned, it's going to be interesting how people react to what we're going through.
Absolutely. And then it is a question, are some of these practices that they've put into place, such as alcohol to go, will they be allowed to continue that? I mean, once we're back up and running, now that's become a part of culture for now, will they be able to take it away? Also in terms of pricing, I mean, right now, a lot of the ones that are offering to go, they're cutting their prices to make it competitive with retail and to make it appealing for customers. But when you start putting regular wine prices back on the list, you know, whatever markup that tends to be, are people going to be willing to pay that price too? So I think that there's going to be a lot of logistics and a lot of things that are going to keep bubbling up as things reopen.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about mixology, because here in China, a lot of people have been experimenting with cocktails in a can, cocktails in small bottles that are really made to be couriered out. And there was still that element of craft cocktails and mixology. Do you see that in the US? Is that something that's going on right now?
Yeah, it's a huge category, and people really do love craft cocktails. And, you know, cocktail bars are dedicated to this craft. People love it, and the to-go kind of versions of it as well. There's different ones in bottles, poured over ice, you're good to go. It's definitely a trend. How that's going to translate now, there's been a move towards more pre-batched cocktails just with the current pandemic. So you're still kind of getting a really great cocktail, but you're getting it. It's not being done right in front of you. It's a little less precious, I think, than some of the experience that you would get. I do think that the batched cocktail from some of the restaurateurs that I spoke with, I think they're going to be continuing on with it just for safety reasons, just for ease of operations too. So I think we're going to see a lot more of this. I do hope that the craft cocktails do come back, but again, restaurants aren't even really allowed to operate their bar spaces just due to crowding and being able to maintain social distancing. So they're not even planning on opening their bars for quite a while.
Right. And going back to wineries, I mean, right now, how can wineries improve their e-commerce and benefit during this situation?
Sure. There's a lot of really great ideas going on. It's been exciting to see the creativity. One thing that I think people can do right away is start looking at their customer lists. I think that instead of just sending out a blanketed email, they should really be looking at segments. They should be looking at who's purchased recently, who's an active, very active customer. I think that you can do a lot of creative things with these lists, creating really targeted emails to people. You can do personal outreach to people. I think it's just a matter of looking at the data that you have and using it smartly. I've seen other things such as free shipping to entice customers to purchase, which I think is always great. And I think that people appreciate free shipping. And again, kind of going back to a lot of those other things we were talking about, just finding other ways to connect with customers, doing Zoom sessions with people, doing virtual tastings with winemakers is really exciting for people. And when you offer these kinds of services, there's that sale component. Certain wineries have put together certain six packs of wines, that way they can taste alongside it. So then you're kind of getting the sale component and they're getting the personal experience. And it's a really fun way to connect. I've seen other wineries do just short little fun videos that they've put up onto their web pages, just that are simple, quick, the snacks of tasting notes, which are fun for people, finding some ways for VIP tastings. Other things that they've been encouraging is for customers to connect with their friends. So they'll do group Zoom tastings for couples who might be located all across the country. They'll all schedule a time together, and it's a really great interactive way for friends to see each other over Zoom. And then you do this, in a sense, replace the vacation or the trip that they were maybe all hoping to take together. And although they can't do it right away, they can all do this in the meantime. So these are really fun activities and just really cool, different ways to think about how to connect with people.
Right. And I think, you know, I was just having a conversation with the Kendall Jackson group right before this, and we were talking about how we've all had to face this pandemic and come up with really fast execution of all of these programs and online activities and online trainings and et cetera, because we had no choice. Whereas I think if this didn't happen, we would have really been a lot slower in the way that we adapt to online. And I want to talk about that. I mean, a lot of people now are using Instagram Live and Zoom So what are some successful, almost creative digital marketing tips that you'd recommend? Because I feel like everyone's kind of doing the same thing. Do you have any tips on how to differentiate yourself during this time?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one thing that people need to be cautious of is falling into that talking heads format. To have just someone on a screen talk at you is really not very interesting. So I think that they need to find different ways to incorporate other elements. For example, there's a winery called Dirty and Rowdy, and they reached out to some of their musician friends for their Zoom tastings with their members. So the musicians will actually write a song for one of the wines, and then they'll perform it live. And then they'll also just have like opening music, live performances. So they're making it really fun and really interactive. One thing I want to say about all of the social media is that I think that it's an interesting medium for wine, because when we talk about wine so much, we're really relying on our sense of taste. But when we're talking about online, it's really, we're in front of a screen. And with that screen, you're using sight and you're using sound. And these aren't senses that we naturally use all that much when we're doing a wine tasting. So I think that we need to be more attuned to how to reach these other senses or excite these other senses that we don't normally use when we're doing wine. So I think that that's just something for people to keep in mind. What is visually appealing to look at? Are there interesting backgrounds that you can do for people? Are these fun and jazzy videos that you can do? I think that it's really, again, the audio part of it, like Dirty and Rowdy, incorporating music into it. I think it can be fun. Doing something interactive, right, like quizzes too. I think that quizzes get people excited and involved. They get it kind of, you're not talking at someone, you're involving them in the conversation. Taking questions beforehand if you're doing some kind of Zoom meeting, so that way people feel that they're going to get something out of it. They're going to get their questions answered. They're going to get content that they were really kind of looking for. Partnering up with other like-minded complementary businesses is another really great way to get involved. Some people are working on is there's a lot of out-of-work sommeliers out there right now, and they have a lot of time and they have a lot of knowledge, and it would be really fun to hire them, get them involved with some kind of tasting too, get their viewpoint, get their expertise. And it's a different viewpoint. And again, it's something kind of fun and different for people.
Right. I think that you've mentioned a couple of things I just want to reiterate. I love that hiring a somm during this crisis, I think, is so important, because when it's all over, and even in the next couple months, they're going to really appreciate what you did. And you're going to make sure that you hopefully get placement in your wine, or that they help support your wines. And I really feel like if you do partner and raise people up in the community, it will come back to you when times are better. And I think we can definitely support each other in this industry during this moment. So actually, I love that idea. And I really think it's something that we should really, push, because I think it's a great thing. And people don't only want to hear about the technical side of wine. Sometimes winemakers get into it and they become a little bit too technical, but I think bringing on a somm, it gets to relate back to how to explain wine in a more general way, in a more understandable way. And also just to also highlight what you've mentioned regarding live music, China has done that as well. JD.com did this, and they've called it online clubbing, which I think is really a great way. and they were, I love it, right? I mean, like, I don't think you could ever club online, because that would just be very awkward, but they managed to do it. And they would partner with like Budweiser and like all the big brands like Pinot Ricard and et cetera. And they were selling beer and spirits. And what they would do is have top DJs come online, and, top beer companies said that they sold 40% more beer in that segment than the day before. So it really did help sales, right? Because you would go directly onto that shop and it would be sponsored from the shop. So it's almost like an Amazon Live, for example. And then you would be able to purchase as you're watching. So yeah, I mean, I love that idea. I love combining the music aspect and making it a little bit more fun. And I love the word online clubbing. I mean, this is where we're at. 2020, I never thought this would happen. But so, we're here. We're here and we're rocking it.
Absolutely. And going back really quickly to just to the out-of-work sommeliers, there is actually a group that is forming here in the U.S. and they're starting to try to make this more of a business and really try to connect sommeliers with consumers. So it's called the Supper Share, and they're getting started. So it's something to look into.
Oh, certainly. That sounds amazing. And I think, wow, I can't imagine what it's like to own a restaurant or be part of the hospitality group, because right now they definitely are suffering. So if anybody has the luxury to spend You know, ordering from your favorite restaurant, it really does go a long way, I believe, at this point.
It absolutely does.
Now, what can we learn from all of this? I mean, what are your takeaways from COVID-19 in the industry at the moment?
Sure. I think, you know, kind of going back to what we've been saying is we're a really resilient industry. You know, something tough comes along and we figure it out. We've weathered crises before. We're able to do it now. I think that this is definitely different than what we've ever encountered, but we know how to be nimble. And it's really impressive to kind of see everybody coming together and everybody really sharing ideas and everybody really supporting each other and just trying to make sure that everyone stays afloat. And if you think about it as an industry in general, we're pretty vulnerable. I mean, it's agriculture. We're subject to Mother Nature. So every harvest, every year, we're subject to something new. So I think just we're resilient. The industry is definitely resilient. I think the other big takeaway, though, is really just the opportunities that are available in order to improve our tech and improve our social. And just thinking about all these new ways that we can reach customers and ways that we'll be able to keep continuing to, you know, find them and talk to them in different ways, even when this is over, and even we can get back to being in front of each other in person. I think a lot of these practices that we're learning now are going to continue on. And I think that they are great ways to just keep growing a business.
Right. And how about some, you know, existing weaknesses in the industry? Have they been amplified by COVID-19?
When you say industry, do you mean wine industry or restaurant industry?
I would say for wine in this case.
I don't think that we've seen fully yet where the weaknesses are. I think that there's definitely some, I'll call them soft spots. I think that when it comes to labor is really kind of an issue. And I think we're going to see that a lot more when it comes to harvest, especially more in the Northern Hemisphere, just because we all do rely so much more on workers coming from elsewhere to help out with harvest. So I think that that's definitely one thing that we're going to be looking at. I think that it might come out just about some of the margins that some of the wineries are working on, especially some of the smaller ones, you know, just how, you know, just how subject people are to, like I said, Mother Nature and just pandemics like this. And, you know, I don't think we're seeing anything dramatic yet, but I do think that given time, we'll see a lot more. And we have to remember that really much of this didn't hit until mid-March. So we've only been at it for 6 weeks or so. I mean, that's really, we've been in lockdown for only 6 weeks. So it's hard to get really sales figures. It's really hard to get data at this point. But I think it's coming, and I think we're going to have a lot of learnings.
Right. And I know when we were just going through it here in China, I felt like, you know, the first month or so was a very reactive month, and people did not know what to do. And a lot of the struggle was with employees and trying to figure out how they manage this new crisis and maintain employees and just maintain cash flow in general. So definitely the first couple of months are just really reactive. But right now what I'm seeing in China here is that everybody is now planning for the future. They're expecting this to be part of the new reality. And also, as we talked about at the beginning, maybe a second wave, or that this coronavirus might get us back in quarantine again next year at the same time. So I think people now are in the planning phase and preparing for the future. But one of the things I did see here in Asia that I just wanted to share was that a lot of people are reconsidering business structure, because a lot of them were heavily reliant on trade. And now they're thinking, well, we can't have all our eggs in the same basket. So now they're really reconsidering e-commerce and taking that up a lot more seriously than a few months ago. And I think even in the West, people are going to start looking at e-commerce and really taking it seriously for what it was. I don't think we've perfected e-commerce, and this has been a wake-up call to really invest and improve our systems.
That's a really great point. And I think especially here in the US, because we have the 3-tier system and in certain states, 4 tiers, and because it is a really scattered, kind of fragmented system, I do think that it's going to make us take a look again at how alcohol is regulated in the US. And, you know, maybe there's something else that's going to come out of it. That's a very good point.
Right. Well, Shane, we just want to wrap up, but I usually finish off with 3 quick questions. So I'm going to ask you some quick questions, and then you have to respond as fast as possible.
Okay.
So my first one is, I saw that you wrote an article about Japan and wine. So can you tell us your experience and thoughts on Japanese wine?
Japanese wine is such an exciting category. I am looking forward to seeing what comes out of it. Right now, Yamanashi, Nagano, and Hokkaido, I think, are probably the three main wine-growing regions from there. You know, you're getting a lot of, especially in Yamanashi, you're getting a lot of Koshu and Muscat Bellier, but it's really interesting to see what a lot of them are doing with international varieties. It's interesting to see how they're being influenced by winemakers across the world. You know, last night we just had a Pet Nat from Japan, which, I mean, what? But, you know, they're taking inspiration.
Did you bring that in from Japan, or did you find that out in the U.S.? Oh, okay. No, I was going to say, I've never heard of them exporting things like that. That's awesome.
No, we had our wine luggage suitcase, and we stocked it up, and we brought it back.
Oh, wow. And right now, my second question is, what is your favorite comfort food and wine pairing?
Ooh, that is such a good question. I'm going to have to say it's probably, number one, champagne just goes with everything. So champagne is definitely the default. Comfort food wise, I would have to probably say, I'm in the mood for hummus and pita. So I think I'm going to say hummus and pita.
Ooh, that is such a good option. And then my last question is, how can we follow your adventures in the industry and read more about what you have to say about the hospitality and wine world?
You can follow me on Instagram. It's at Shayna Speaks Wine. Twitter is the same handle, at Shayna Speaks Wine. And I also publish all of my articles on my website, or at least link to them. And it's ShaynaSpeaksWine.com.
Perfect. Shayna, thank you so much for all your insights. And I think you're right. We're going to make it through, and we have to be resilient throughout these times.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.